morning. So the exercise today is to figure out what can go wrong when we're writing a plow. And the challenge scenario I want to look at, well, actually, let's do it a little bit first. Let me look at what happens when we're writing a brand new plow first. And let's just imagine we're going to do one block. So the file's small. What do we have to modify among the disk data structures? Because we'd like this file to survive when the machine comes back. Well, there are three things we've got to do. Number one is, we have a block worth of content that's got to get rid of that. Number two is, we have a block that is some block in the allocation bitmap. And that block mainly serves to record the fact that this content block is now allocated. We have to record that. And we could use a more complex data structure than an allocation bitmap, but most of the more complicated data structures need some kind of indexing mechanism. The minute you go to indexing mechanisms, you tend quickly to get more blocks involved. So let me just stick with a simple data structure for a minute. We're going to deal with indexing data structure and files, and then we can bring that intuition back to the allocation structure if we wanted to use a different structure. In fact, most file systems now do use allocation bitmaps. They may do regional allocation bitmaps for different parts of the file system, but it's still, generally speaking, bitmaps. And the third is that we have this inode table on the disk, and this inode table contains the inode for our file somewhere that we've just created. That inode resides inside a block, and we're going to have to write that block because we don't have a file until there is something that we can look up. So we have three blocks to write down. What order do you want to write them in? Pick one. Doesn't matter. The point is I want to actually walk through the ways this can go wrong. So let's just pick one top. Somebody pick one.
Set the bitmap first, then the inode is at the right time.
Bitmap first. So the proposal is we're going to do the bitmap first, the inode second, and the content last. Cool. And let me go through this the first time, assuming that block level writes do not fail. That is to say, we're not going to worry about actually getting corrupted data on the drive. And statistically, that is a reasonable expectation. But if we really want to be extreme about recoverability, we're going to have to look at that. And I'll talk about techniques for doing that tomorrow. Probably. Okay, so before I write the allocation bitmap, the situation is that I have no knowledge that this content block has been allocated at all. After I write the allocation bitmap, I have a record that this block is allocated. There's nothing in it yet. In fact, worse than that, there's probably garbage bits in it, because there's a good chance that this block was previously used and still holds the content of whatever was there before. So, suppose I fail, system crashes, just after writing the allocation bit. Now what's the situation? Is the file system consistent? Consistent means that all of the data structures in the file system agree about what's going on. So, if I fail just after writing the allocation bit down, is it consistent? Why not?
Bitmap says that it's allocated, but there's no way to get it.
Yeah, and then somebody says it's allocated, but it's not in use. Can I recover? Assuming that I detected this situation, and let me explain that bit. There's actually one more block, which we're not going to write at this point, but conceptually, we want to think about writing after every file. We're not going to do it for performance reasons. I said that at the front of the file system, there's a super block. Well, in that super block, there's a bit. And this bit tells us whether the file system was cleanly shut down. So here's how this works. If I mount a file system read-only, I'm not making any changes to it, there's no big deal. If I mount it for writing, the way this works in many file systems is, the very first step is I pick up the super block, I set the bit that says, if you see this bit, this file system was not shut down clean. And then I go on and I access the file system. Why? Because now if I crash, then I have a bit that says, wait a minute, we crashed, we've got to do something to recover the file system and figure out how to reestablish consistency. That's how we're going to notice that consistency is required. When we do an orderly shutdown of the file system, the very last steps are to reread the super block, turn the bit off, and put the super block back in. That's how we know it was an orderly shutdown. Okay, so I have a block that's allocated but not reachable. And I have a bit that says, if I crash, there's something wrong. So now my goal is to reestablish consistency in the data structures. How do I? That's the, when you start up a Linux system, right, you watch those little bars go across the screen as it comes up. Those bars are being generated by something called FS check, which is file system consistency check. And those of us who are way too old have been heard to call this fuzz check, because it cleans up the fuzz in the file system. Anyway, so how would I recover this situation?
Flush the entire inode table and look at every single indirection or every single pointer to content or to indirection blocks and keep track of which blocks it is that you're actually hitting from the bitmap. And the ones that don't get hit from the bitmap are should not contain content or should be flagged as, hey, you know, there might be something here, but I don't know what it is. You might want to check.
Well, if they're not reachable, they should be marked free.
Well, unless something happened where the allocation bitmap itself got corrupted, and or rather.
No, hang on. Let's stick with the problem we're trying to solve. The problem we're trying to solve at this point is, I have a bit marked in the allocation bitmap, and I never got around to writing the corresponding block, and I haven't updated the bitmap.
So for this particular case, then if there's something that is unreachable but marked as used in the bitmap, then the bitmap.
Okay, so let me just get you to refine something you said. You said we're going to lock the inode table. Is that actually enough, or are there other things I have to consider as well? You're right as far as you go. There's a missing detail in what you said. You actually applied it as you went by.
Don't you need to write the data first because you're not going to really go with
it? I don't have the data. I crashed. It's gone.
Yeah, I know, but if you do, I'm saying the order.
No. Let's. I want to fix this bug before we go on to fix the order. Yes, this was the wrong order to do, but this happens. So let's work out how to recover from it first. You actually said it another way. You applied. It's not enough to run over the inode table. I also have to run over all of the indirect blocks that are reachable from the inode table. And you applied that on your way by. You just didn't actually come out and say it. Basically, I have the inode table, in some sense, is a long list of pointers, each of which is the root of a reachability tree. And I can just visit that reachability tree and check it against the allocation bitmap. And if there is something reachable that is not marked allocated, which can also happen, I gotta mark it. In fact, at that point I got a real problem. Because the possibility exists that it's reachable from multiple places and not allocated. Now I don't know which block it belongs, which file it belongs to. But reachable, not allocated, at the very least, I got two options. I can either mark it allocated or I can delete the file. Second thing. Allocated, not reachable. Well, then it's free. If it's not reachable, it doesn't have anything that matters, it's a free one. While I'm doing this walk, there's actually something else I want to check, which is, I actually want to make sure that every content block and every indirection block is reachable from exactly one file. If I really manage to scribble the data in the wrong order, and the whole point of today's discussion is to figure out what the right order is, if I really manage to scramble the eggs, right, I'll end up with a block that, because of corrupted data structures, looks like it appears in more than one file.
What about multiple links to a single file?
Multiple links don't exist at this level. Multiple links are something that happens in the directory.
You don't have an inode for each link?
When you do a hard link,
right,
what that means is you have two different directory entries, both of which name the same item. I haven't done directories. Let me just pause for a second and do directories here. A directory entry in Unix, right, is a string which is the file name. A device, which is really the file system. Right? Device here basically is partition, and thereby, by implication, which file system. And the item. Oh, I'm sorry, this is just wrong. There is no device in the directory structure. In Unix, a directory in one file system is only permitted to reference files in the same file system. So if I've gotten to this directory, I already know what device I'm in, so I already know what device the file has to be. So if I do a hard link, that's just creating a second directory entry that has the same inode. Once I get to the inode, every indirection block and content block starting in that given inode better be unique to that inode. Otherwise, I got corruption. Right? And you may, on rare circumstances, it used to be more common than it is now, because people debug the stuff that we're talking about today. Time. You may occasionally see a MS check complaining that a block is multiply referenced. And that's really bad, because the problem is there's nothing in the file system that tells us which, if any, of those references is right. And there are two ways to solve it. One is to split the block, duplicate it so it's no longer shared, and the other is to delete both files. Both of these are undesirable outcomes. The problem is, if you don't delete the files, it might be good. On the other hand, with high likelihood, frankly, if it's that corrupt, both of these files are in that trash. Alright, so writing the allocation bitmap is actually, first, it's actually not too bad. It's a very recoverable error. What about if we were deleting this block? Would writing the allocation bitmap first be okay? Because we can recover it according to the same strategy that we just gave. The thing you gotta be careful about is actually the in-memory version. You can't reuse the block until you're fully done deleting. That's how you would get a block that was referenced from more than one file. You weren't done deleting it from the old file, not done in the sense that you had not written down everything you needed to write down, and then you went ahead and reallocated it. And because these writes were going to independent files, hey, the new one managed to get out to the disk first, boom, you crash, and now you've got a block reference from two places, and you don't know what the heck's going on. What about if I write the inode first? Yeah. I'll write the inode first. Not quite. If I have to, assuming I'm going to do a recovery process, we could make the rules of recovery
be such that if the inode goes down but the allocation bit in that disagrees, then we don't believe the inode. You have to agree that far. So we could manage the issue, but your intuition is correct. We've got to be really careful that that content block better not be reachable until it's initialized. Because Murphy's Law rules in this stuff, and I promise you that content block contains somebody's clear text password. Or something equally desirable. Whatever it contains, it sure ain't what you thought. So, depending on how we design the consistency checker, we might get away with it. But the key thing to notice is that combination of data structures, there are various ways to deal with them if they disagree. But once they both go to disk, you are, you'll pardon the pun, committed. And if you put those two to disk first, doesn't matter what order, because we can alter the consistency checker rules. You're toast because the content block is not written in. All right, so there's a general rule. The general rule is get your content on the disk first. Variation is rule. Don't hand out pointers to stuff until after it's initialized. It's just begging for trouble. The reason C++ constructors are a powerful idea is they guarantee that you cannot have an uninitialized object if you use them right. Big if, by the way. This is why Java tells you very explicitly when you say new on some class, not only what happens after the constructor is run, but also what is the state of the object at the time the constructor is entered. Right? Those fields are null at the time the constructor is entered. Any object reference that's in the object is a reference to the nil object, and I believe it's the case that any data element in the object is initialized to zero. I'm not 100% sure about the second part, but I'm pretty sure about the references. Now, the compiler, if it looks at your constructor and says, well, he initializes before he looks, it's allowed to take that initialization out. But that initialization exists to make sure the object is well defined. And the key to that is you've got the content initialized before you make reference to it. So what we want to do in a file system is guarantee that the content goes down before the metadata goes down. Metadata here is all the bookkeeping data, allocation bitmap, inode structure, and direction data. All right, let's go to the file one more. So now, we got two content blocks, and I'm going to ignore the multiple pointers in the inode thing here because I want to illustrate the problem you get into in the direction blocks. It's a practical matter. We would need more content blocks than this to have in the direction block, so imagine we had none. So here's my indirection block. When can I write that? Remember, the scenario here is I'm writing a brand new never before seen file. And that means these blocks have never been written before. Now, given that that's true, does it matter what order I write the content versus the indirection? I'm still holding constant the statement that at the very least I better write the inode last. Because in fact, we've established that if I design my file system consistency checking mechanism, I could maybe get away with writing the allocation bitmap even at the same time as the content. The cautionary tale about that is, so far I'm talking about one file, here's where Murphy will get you. It'll turn out there's a second file, okay, and Murphy hates file system designers, and it'll turn out that second file will also twiddle bits in this allocation bitmap. And when you consider this problem that we're now doing in one file happening in parallel simultaneously for lots of files, things get a little tricky. Let's just look at the one file constraint first.
new file, does it matter what order I write the indirection of the content block in?
The indirection blocks eventually have a point to the content.
Yes.
If you don't know the main place. Assuming you haven't written the content, there's a good chance you don't know where it's going to go.
No, no, I know where everything's going to go by the time I'm asking this question. You're right. If I haven't made placement decisions about the blocks, then I don't know enough to even fill in the indirection blocks, and I can't write them. That's absolutely right. That's a good point that I have.
Well, you do the reason.
I'm sorry. And one of the interesting policy questions when you design a file system is when to make a decision about placement. You do it early, at the moment you realize, hey, I need a new block, let me allocate it down, sort of pin down where it's going to go, or do you do it late? Why would I do it late? Because what I really care about is where is the disk head at the time I'm doing the write. And by deferring the binding decision about where the block is going to go, I can take advantage of that. So the right answer turns out to be defer that as long as you can, but no longer. The tricky part is to recognize when you step over that line. Okay, sorry.
You just said initial as part of, so do content and then indirection block.
I did say initialize first, but the reason for initialize first is the don't hand out references until something is initialized. So let me back up. From the earlier discussion, it's hopefully pretty clear that a safe strategy might be too conservative, but at least it would be safe, would be to write the content block first and then write the indirection block, which I think is what you're proposing. Certainly that would be safe. But what would happen, new file, if I wrote the indirection blocks first and then wrote the content blocks and then did all this stuff on the left? Yeah, I know the application.
You wouldn't have any reference to the indirection block in the INO table, so...
No harm, no foul. I'm going to get away with it because... Okay, this tree of indirection blocks pointing to content, it's a graph. A tree is a kind of a graph. And the reason I'm going to get away with it is the whole tree is unreachable until I write down the item. So, yes, if I wrote the indirection blocks down first and I crash at the wrong moment, those indirection blocks will point to garbage. Absolutely. And in a purist sense, we could argue that was the wrong thing to do. We have done out of order initialization in him. But the reason it's okay is those indirection blocks themselves are in turn not reachable. And when I run the consistency checker, I'm going to look at the allocation bitmap or say, hey, I got some unreachable blocks here. And it says I allocated them, but you know, it doesn't look like I allocated them. I can't get them. Just free the damn things.
Is there a benefit to doing one over the other?
Okay. Here's my disk, right? I drew the picture with platters and heads, but logically we're going to think of this as a big, long, linear thing. If we fall off the end of one track, we'll go to the next one. Fall off the end of one cylinder, we'll go to the next one. So, what this means is, if I'm writing a bunch of blocks that are very closely packed together, they're probably on the same track, because I'm doing this, there's a direct relationship between the track organization and the linear placement of data. Now, watch what happens. I've got a head. There's some place where I'm going to start my write, and the head is moving. I write some number of blocks. And then I'm going to pause. Why am I going to pause? Because I have to wait for those blocks to actually go to the disk before I can write the indirection blocks in the conservative strategy. What does that pause do? While that pause is going on, I've got other blocks coming in saying, hey, write me! By the time I get around to writing those indirection blocks, where's my head? It's still waiting to write. So what happens is, now I get a bunch of content blocks, and then off at the end, if I'm really lucky, I get the indirection locks. Oops. I should mark these IB so it's clear that I don't need unit blocks. I need indirection. Okay, now, I get them all of this. Rudy. Now, boy, that gets me. That turned me out of mode when I was a child watching television. Here I am, isn't it? I get this stuff to the disk, okay? And you come along and you say, cool, I would like to read that file. It's a week later, right? You know, this is something in your web cache. You didn't even know you downloaded it, right? You're going for the page again. It wants the same damn piece of thing that you saved before, right? I want to read that file. Of course, the problem is now, back to disk drives. One of the decisions you have to make when you manage a disk drive, glad you asked this question. What's my policy going to be for how to move the disk head around? Here are a couple of choices. I can go, start at the beginning, scan to the end, do any reads and writes I have to do, pick up the head, come all the way back, start at the beginning, scan to the end, do any reads and writes I have to do. Right? But I'm only going to do it in one direction, right? That's called scan. Second possibility. Hey, you know what the nice thing about disk drives is I can write going backwards. So, I'll start at one end, I'll go all the way to the other end, doing whatever work I have to do. Next thing I have to do, good, I'll go back, do whatever work I have to do. Right? And I'll actually do work in both directions. It's called a bidirectional scan. There's a refinement in that. Hey, if I'm going that way and there's nothing more to do over there, it's time to turn around. No point going someplace where there's no reason to go there. That's called look. Right? Ah, should I go there? Maybe I should look if there's something to do over there. Now, depending on what policy you choose, you get different latency effects. So let's consider the unidirectional scan case. I just wrote the inodes out at the tail end of the file. So the next time I go to read this file, the rule is now unidirectional, so I'm always going the same direction. And to read the file, I have to pick up the indirect blocks first. Because until I have the indirect blocks, I don't know where the content blocks are. But the scan rule says, and now that I'm here, I'm going to drag my butt all the way out to the end of the disk and all the way back, and then I'm entitled to start again, and now I can get the content blocks. We just did a whole sync across the disk in many IOs, delaying this file. Because we're doing this for 30 other files at the same time. Whereas if I had been a little smarter and I knew the disk algorithm, the disk algorithm is something that the operating system chooses. If I knew the disk algorithm, and I was legally able to do so, then I could say, no, put the indirection blocks in front, I'll pick them up, I'll read them as I'm driving by, and then I'll pick up the other content blocks as my head is moving in the same direction. So the reason we're very concerned about latency effects in disk drives is not that we can alter the physics of the drive. It spins at the rate that it spins. It's actually, we can, for power management, we can make it worse by slowing it down. But if we design our layout in a way that understands the physical behavior of the drive, we can at least not make it worse. Right. So the story that all blocks are equal and you should just pick one? You know, the difference between theory and practice is that in theory, there's no difference between theory and practice, but in practice there is. So it really matters what order you do this stuff in. So that's the answer to your question about does it matter. And in this case, I had the freedom, because the entire graph was not referenced, I could just write the whole damn thing down in one go. Now, in fact, it turns out in this case, in a certain sense, under the scan assumption, I actually want to write the indirect blocks first. I mean, I want to schedule them all in one go. So, you know, if they go out of order, that would be okay. But when I'm choosing my placement, I want the indirect blocks ahead of the content blocks in the scan. So there are two different issues here. One is a placement decision. With respect to placement, I want the indirect blocks to go out first. The other is a batching decision. So let me back up. When I say, which one do you want to write first? Hey, if I had 50 content blocks, I could write all of them at the same time. Because the unit of failure is the file. It doesn't matter which one of those blocks fail. They're all in a co-equal class for purposes of failure. But in the conservative strategy, once I've got all 50 content blocks going to the disk, in the conservative strategy, I want to make sure they actually stabilize on the disk before I write metadata. That gap in between them is what's called a write barrier. It says, finish all of those writes before you start any of these here writes. So what's really going on here is we're organizing batches of writes. The batch boundary tells us all of these things can be written together, and therefore, if I had a bunch of requests, like, you know, I had 20 requests, I hand them to the disk in some random order, right? The driver, because all of those requests can go in any order I want because they're all in the same batch, the driver is entitled to sort them. It's entitled to reorder them as long as it doesn't violate the write barriers. So if I were to tell the disk drive about these blocks in some arbitrary order, when I tell it, I'm already telling it where it's going to go. But I can tell it about these six or seven blocks in any arbitrary order. If they're all the same batch, the driver is entitled to say, yeah, but if I did them in that order, that would be really boneheaded. Let me sort them before I write them to the disk. Why sort them? Because I know which way the disk head is going, and I get to do it in one pass rather than 15. Okay, so that's the write barrier issue, but the separate issue, and this is the placement decision. The placement decision has relatively little to do with the write order. Yes, if I put the inode in front, I'll use IN for inode, then again, the scan algorithm would have to go all the way in, come back, write the inode. And yes, that's going to be another pass. It turns out that I can delay writing the inode. I mean, think about it. My Unix system tries hard to keep everything in memory. It only flushes things to the disk every 5 minutes anyway. Well, every 30 seconds nowadays. So, you know, if I wait 20 seconds to write the inode, it's really no big deal. Unless you told me I need it now. And there are cases where you want it now. And the thing is, if I can wait that long, you know what? By the time 20 seconds go by, I promise you I'm going to be visiting this end of the disk. So that delay actually isn't going to get in my way. The reason I care about placement is that come the time to read the file, that graph of indirection blocks creates dependencies that dictate what order I have to read in, and I want the placement to be such that I can read in one pass. And that's why I want the indirection blocks on the line. That's the real reason. In this case, in this example, new file, for writing purposes, it did not matter whether the indirect blocks got written first, but for reading purposes, it will matter. So the key thing I want you to get here is there are two different strategies we have to consider. One is write speed, write optimization, and the second is read optimization. Placement is about read optimization. And the challenge in write optimization is to make a balance between batching and the labor of reestablishing consistency and the possibility of reestablishing consistency. And there are orders we could do these writes in where there would be no algorithm that could figure out what went wrong. Right, so number one constraint, the writes better be recoverable in the sense that we can fix things. And then subject to that constraint, you want the writes not to require additional overhead. Okay. Okay, now, if I'm doing unidirectional scan, all that planning is not too hard to figure out. Fortunately, I'm not doing unidirectional scan. I'm not even doing unidirectional look. Well, let me be careful. There is an operating system that does unidirectional look. It's the one we're building here, and contrary to what the textbook tells you, it is the right thing to do for that operating system, but that's because the I/O behavior of that operating system is somewhat unusual. The problem is, if you bidirectional scan, what we're going to discover is, hey, half the time I'm moving to the left and I want the indirection blocks on the right side so I get to them first. But half the time I'm moving to the right, and then the indirection blocks are going to be in the tail position, right? And the thing is, you can't have them in both places. So you got to pick one. Turns out real drives don't do either of these algorithms. There's a variation. There's a third class of algorithm, which is known as shortest sync first. So here's the idea. My head is in some position and I can either go forward or backwards. Whatever is the closest thing to do, that's what I'm going to do next. There's a problem with shortest sync first. Suppose I'm doing a whole bunch of I/O in the middle of the drive. And you're the poor guy who's trying to do a right out of the south end. There's a chance, in fact, quite a good chance, that your right will be indefinitely delayed. Because each time the drive says, what do I do next? Oh, hey, there's something right here. I better back up and do that. Well, there's something right here. I better step forward and do that. I better step down in the beginning to wait. So the problem with shortest sync first is it doesn't guarantee any bound on the delay to service for either reads or writes. So there's a variation on shortest sync first, right? There's always one more hack. Why do I want shortest sync first? Well, because it does let me back up to do things like direction blocks in the right place, particularly when I'm reading. The hack is, well, I'll do shortest sync first, but I'll put a bound on how far I'll back up. And I'll establish an overall policy that guarantees overall progress. So, generally speaking, I'm moving in one direction. I'll take a couple of steps back. Basically, I'm still committed to going that way. And then I'll turn around and I'll come back. Why do I want that? Because that solves the problem of having no bound on the delay. I have to have a progress guarantee to avoid the bound problem. By the way, there are also problems with bidirectional scan. Because if you think about what's going on in bidirectional scan, stuff out of the extremes of the disk tend to get starved for attention. Because if you think about the statistics of where the head is likely to be, bidirectional look. But stuff in the middle is going to tend to get serviced better than stuff at the end. That's under the assumption of random distribution of data, which is never observed in the wild. Careful about section. All right, so what about, so far I've said, story is we're writing a brand new file. The beauty of a brand new file, the graph isn't connected to anything, an awful lot of constraints can be relaxed. What about if I'm modifying a file? So I have an existing file, it has two content blocks, and I want to rewrite one. Do I have to change the allocation bitmap? No, blocks already allocated. Do I have to change the indirection blocks? I can rewrite the block where it is, and there's a risk that the write will fail, but I don't have to move the block. I may want to move the block for performance reasons, but I don't have to move the block. Do I have to rewrite the lineup? Yeah. Turns out I have to rewrite the inode because I have to update the modification time that's higher than the inode, but that can be deferred. So another issue here, there are some failures are sort of more fatal than other failures.
Right.
A failure that loses file content, people tend to think is a big deal. A failure where, hey, once in a blue moon, I don't actually make it to update the modification time. The content's okay, but the modification time may be a little stale because maybe I didn't get to the inode update for it. You know, if I asked you if that was a, you know, sort of like for your life kind of an issue, you'd probably look at me like I was nuts. You'd probably do that anyway, but certainly if I asked you that question. So, when you're doing failure design, it may be that some failures are okay, because they're kind of, they're soft failures, right? They're only horrible consequences, and they don't happen very often since it's all.
Or they're weak failures, I'm not sure what the right term is.
They're inconveniences. They're certainly not multiple world problems. Alright, what about if I'm growing a file? I've got a two-block file, and I want to add a third block. Do I have to modify the allocation bit? I gotta get a block from somewhere, man. But special case, right? I could, if I'm really slick about my I/O, I could do a scheme where I know I have a recently deleted block and I know that file's been updated, but I haven't yet updated the bitmap to reflect the fact that the block is deallocated. And I can reuse a recently deallocated block to avoid the bitmap update. And that may seem like a micro-optimization, but that's 10 milliseconds to you and me. It may add up to her. But in principle, I've got to update, I mean, barring optimization, I have to update the allocation block. So I have to update the inode. Yeah, for mod time, I'm going to have to update the inode. Do I have to update the inode for any other reason? Because mod time, we can make excuses about it. You just agreed with that. No, I just asserted about that. Those of you who weren't asleep kind of nodded. So yeah. Do I have to update the inode?
New file size and block.
New file size, right. I have to update the inode, and it's a correctness issue, not just an inconvenience issue. And I have to update the indirection block because I need to add a new pointer to it. Good. So all this stuff is going to get updated. And it is still the case that the metadata wants to come late. And it's probably the case that I want to write the allocation bitmap down before the inode, although that's a little bit negotiable, again, depending on my consistency checker. But now I want to look at the content versus the indirection. I've got this new content block, and I've got a modified indirection block. Does it matter what order I write it in? We agreed earlier, if I write the content block first, right, as long as I laboriously follow the initialize before point rule, I should be okay. And that's still true. Can I write the indirection block first here?
No, because you already have something pointing to the indirection block. So you have a, you know, from the root of the tree, you would be able to get to something that's there.
Okay, so the problem here is the graph is regional. And if I modify the graph, I have to modify it in a way that respects regionality. That's what you're saying.
Right.
How sure are you?
And this follows the same rule as writing the inode last when writing a new file.
Are you assuming I have written the allocation block?
In the allocation bitmap?
Yeah. Have I done that already? Just pick a position. And either I have or I haven't. Pick one. I'm going to explore it both ways. Just pick one.
Yes.
I've written the allocation block already. In that case, you are absolutely right. This graph is regional. Okay, because the allocation bitmap says the content block is valid. The indirect block says the content block is there. And the content block says, I don't know what my data is. This is not the option we want. What about if the allocation block still says that content block is free?
Now does the work matter? Could I write that indirection block first?
Yes, because it wouldn't be reachable.
Why is it reachable?
Because the bitmap says it's free.
Because the bitmap says it's free. So what determines the definition of reachability? You're exactly right. So this tells us something about what it means to be reachable. So what does it mean to be reachable?
Well, if you have an entry in the IO table and the allocation bitmap is reachable.
You're giving me an answer about the data structure. Who decides what's reachable? Yeah, yes, it has to do with data structure. But somebody's making an active decision about what's reachable to them. The reason it was okay to exploit this fact about the bitmap is we knew that somebody was going to check before we could go wrong. Who? Because on the face of it, if I just look at the data structures, it is reachable, right? And the indirection block points to the block.
The file consistency.
The consistency check there. Okay. So look, the point here is you can play lots of games in the order of operation because you are in a position to negotiate the details of what constitutes reachability. You can trade complexity in the checker up to a point for degrees of freedom in the I.O. And the catch is, the checker is not a program that gets to make mistakes. The more complicated you make it, the more it's going to hurt. That's observation one. Observation two, the checker is a program that runs under severe constraint. You've got 300 gigabytes worth of drive. That's one drive. Your file system is measured in terabytes, single files. And the checker has to be able to hold in memory, which is to say, within the limits of the machine virtual address space, which is 4 gig. If I can do a big swap area, but I still got limits, okay, so the checker is recording the information as it goes about these blocks in order to implement the check. And all of that information has to be able to be managed in a very limited amount of storage. Furthermore, you want that checker algorithm to be able to make a very limited number of passes over this data structure, because the bigger this disk gets, the more it is going to hurt. I watched something check a terabyte file system last night. I've had more fun watching paint dry. If any of you haven't watched paint dry, you should. I'm going to use nose blockers because it's nasty stuff. So there's a negotiation here, but there's back pressure. We'll come back to that tomorrow.